You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
On Tuesday, the government released its first draft of the proposed replacement for the 1991 Resource Management Act. The proposed replacement covers land use change and environmental regulation, which the government says will provide a clear direction of urban and environmental progress. I spoke to the Minister for the Environment, David Parker, about what the draft entailed. To start, I asked him why the government has decided to replace the RMA.
Well, the RMA, I think there's wide agreement across society that's passed its use-by date because it's not meeting its fundamental purposes, which are twofold. One is to protect the environment, and subject to protecting the environment, it's to enable appropriate development like housing. Under the RMA, we've had degrading water quality, increasing climate-changing emissions, and a housing crisis. And although the RMA is not the only thing that's responsible for those poor outcomes, it's contributed to them. So we thought we had to move to fix those things.
The first draft contains obviously three separate acts, the National Built Environments Act, the Strategic Planning Act, and the Climate Adaptation Act. Briefly, what do each of these entail?
Well, the core replacement for the RMA is the Natural and Built Environments Act. I'll go into that in some detail because it's the most important part. But before that, in order to make longer-term planning decisions that are more rational, have better formed and functioning urban areas, you need to set aside areas for trunk infrastructure like rail or road lines and protect them against development. At the moment, we haven't done that very well under the RMA. And that's one of the reasons why our urban form isn't as good as it could be. So the Strategic Planning Act will sit above the Natural and Built Environments Act and try and integrate decisions across the Land Transport Management Act, the Local Government Act, and the Climate Change Response Act so that we have better regional spatial planning. The Climate Change Adaptation Act, it's important in the system, but it doesn't need to be landed at exactly the same time as the NBA or the SPA. That's quite a complex piece of work because we have to work out as a society how we deal with issues like managed retreat and where it is necessary to retreat from areas rather than avoid creating more risk, actually retreat. How are those costs shared between public and private? What costs are privatised? What costs are socialised?
So how then do you, I guess, weight each of the factors as well as including things like te tiriti claims and other environmental concerns?
The Natural and Built Environments Act is the key to that. And that's the bit that we've put the draft of the core provisions of to a select committee for an inquiry while we work on the detail of some of the Strategic Planning Act and the Climate Change Response Act. And in terms of the Natural and Built Environments Act, one of the problems has been that cumulative effects haven't been well managed under the RMA. That has always included language about avoid remedying or mitigating adverse environmental effects. But in practice, it's generally been that the environmental effects of a proposed activity have been mitigated rather than avoided. And the effect of that has been, although things have been done in an individual instance, with reasonable levels of responsibility, each adverse effect, although mitigated, is still real, and those have accumulated over time. And therefore, if you conceive of the environment as a salami, we've taken a slice off that environmental services, slice by slice by slice. And those cumulative effects have added up to degraded waterways. So we're trying to avoid that in the future by having an outcomes focus rather than an effects basis. And those outcomes will be specified in the national planning framework and with some very limited exceptions relating to, say, a road realignment, you won't be able to get an approval to do something that breaches the national planning framework bottom lines.
But it's not scheduled to come into practice till 2023, or at least that's when the draft's meant to be finalised. Does this not limit the immediate impacts of the reform, especially with mounting housing crisis and mounting environmental concerns?
You're quite right that you can't rely upon this future legislation to remedy current ills. and you've got to move to control those adverse effects before the new legislation comes into effect. And that was a decision that we took immediately coming into government, and that's why in respect of the likes of the housing crisis, we've used RMA-based instruments, a National Policy Statement on Urban Development, to require councils to enable, for example, urban intensification in Auckland, and why there's a lot of things outside of the RMA that have been done, like infrastructure, you know, building more social houses. And in respect of the degradation of fresh water, that has been dealt with by the promulgation of a new National Policy Statement on Fresh Water Management, which does actually include bottom lines, which will be transitioned into the new system. But, you know, that's some 30 years after the RMA was passed, and in the intervening 30 years, things were allowed to get worse.
Yeah, so back onto the bottom lines, Judith Collins has said that these are very difficult to enforce and to manage, as well as criticising the draft for creating rules that are too complex and costly. Do you think this is going to limit its efficiency in allowing resource consent and in protecting environmental concerns?
Well, I actually don't accept her criticism. No, with due respect, I think she's just wrong. I mean, one of the problems for oppositions is that they try to create media space for themselves by criticising everything that governments do, even though they themselves agree that the RMA is past its use-by date. So, you know, there's been a lot of civil society involvement in prior reports, the Environmental Defence Society, the Productivity Commission, Infrastructure New Zealand, the Problem Council, Local Government New Zealand. They've all done their versions of what needed to be changed in the RMA. Then we had a panel chaired by retired Court of Appeal Judge Tony Randerson, who's long experienced in these issues. And now we're essentially implementing the recommendations of the Randerson Review.
So specifically, in what ways will the draft and the new reform make it more simple to, I don't know, get resource consent and to build new houses?
At the moment, a lot of resource consents are complicated around housing. You need a resource consent generally, not just for the subdivision, but to build a house. And we're considering how that can be simplified by being more clear in plans as to what the level of discretion is with council officials as to the range of boundary effects that would be allowed, for example, with height to boundary planes and intrusions into those recession planes. At the moment, for those things to be contested requires a full-blown council hearing. And that's costly. One of the ideas of the Randerson Review was that if we are more clear in plans as to what the level of discretion is that sits with council, so they can only exercise discretion within those bounds, but then do that with affected parties, and in the event of disagreement, resolve those disagreements through alternative dispute mechanisms rather than court-like processes through appeals.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.